saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes, great for any project. Whether you're pouring a walkway, a concrete slab, or setting a post, view our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, what up, H-Town? Hey, how you doing?
That's pretty good.
Are you kidding me?
We're supposed to play his, and then the listeners were going to vote on that. But you can let us know. 713-780-ESPN was my hey, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? Better than Blankers. 713-780-3776. I think it's very clear.
Hey, yeah. What up, H-Town? Hey, how you doing?
That's way better. That's way better.
Better than what?
You.
Oh, my gosh.
So okay. Much better.
All righty, then.
Let's leave it up to the Hive. 713-780-3776. Who should be saying, hey, what up, H-Town, every single day? Blankers or Branham? 713-780-3776. Let us know. The Houston Texans are a bad football team. That's something we do know. We don't need a vote on. Don't tell the Texans they're going to rebuild to Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio, for whatever reason, doesn't like that word. Nick Caserio should be saying rebuild as much as he should possibly be allowed to say it. Like, if you're a general manager and you're in a rebuild, why wouldn't you be like, yeah, we're rebuilding and we got a few years to go? Because it increases your job security and pressure.
It pads your own ability to do your job because you don't have unrealistic expectations that have people more critical of you. It's a no-brainer.
People want Caserio fired because of the draft picks haven't been perfect, because of the trades for Ryan Finley, Anthony Miller, your dude in Green Bay,
the coaching
hires that you've had, Cully and Lovie Smith. I don't want Nick Caserio fired, but if they were going to fire Nick Caserio after two seasons, the reasoning that I would hope Cal McNair had is his refusal to say that they're in a rebuild. That is so dumb to refuse to say you're not rebuilding. I don't understand
that at all. Is that ego-driven or stubbornness?
No, I think it's... I don't think so. I really don't.
But I know where I'm coming from, right?
Yeah. I think for some people that would be the case.
Like the arrogance of a Belichick tree guy is going to come in and go, we're never rebuilding, we're reloading.
I don't... Caserio, yes. Like, I can totally see that possibility. I just don't think Caserio's that guy. Like, Caserio doesn't strike me as an egocentric, driven, like, he's so proud and thinks he's like the, hot, Nick Caserio doesn't give me those vibes. Now, maybe Nick Caserio's selling to me something that isn't true, which could certainly be the case. I just don't get that vibe from Caserio that he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to come in here and flip this up and it's not a rebuild. I think that Nick Caserio is trying to avoid that word because it shows you where the organization's at, and it's like... Maybe they don't want that to be the message to fans. I think that's where it's coming from more than like this egocentric thing.
See, because I would say that, because O'Brien was a Patriots type guy for a while anyway, that you would come in kind of like when we said when Van Gundy didn't want to do anything to the coaching fraternity and the stuff we were talking about the other day, that maybe I can understand it. I don't want to crap on a guy now that he's already gone and unload even more saying how bad he is. But I would think that most guys would come in and go, I didn't make this mess, but I'm here to clean it up. And so however long it takes, it's not my doing. And the reason why it takes this long isn't because I'm dragging my feet. It's because I'm trying to make up for what I was left behind with when you got rid of the last guy.
Yeah.
And I think that most guys would come in there, like you said, for job security and say, hey, look, I was brought in to do a job. Currently, that job is to reconstruct a roster and create a more competitive football team. That's an ongoing process. But a lot of guys are just too stubborn for a variety of reasons we just covered to say, I'm not doing that. We can turn this around quickly, and that's where they get themselves into trouble.
1185 says ignorance. I'm going to say it's just because they don't want to send that message. I don't know why they wouldn't want to send that message, but they don't. I would have went with the whole Sam Presti, Oklahoma City's always trading for picks. Who was the dude in Oklahoma in Philly? I'm blanking on the
Sam Hinkie.
Sam Hinkie. Yeah, Sam Hinkie. I would have went Sam Hinkie. Trust the process. And he tried to tell you trust the process over the results. He said that, but then, oh, yeah, we're not rebuilding. It is ignorance to 1185's point. I completely agree with that. But the Texans aren't a rebuild. We're gonna slap you with a little bit of reality. Texans aren't a rebuild. They have one win right now. This is the – yesterday, Brendan and I, whenever we were talking for 30 minutes, whenever we broke bread for just a second, we were talking about how far along into the rebuild are the Texans. And I think you need to set the bar before you have this conversation. Brendan and I came to the Texans are 1.5 years into the rebuild for under Nick Caserio, because Caserio didn't have a first or second round pick in his first draft class. He's coming off his first full draft class, but he does have the extra capital of trading Deshaun Watson for the extra, three first round draft picks last year, this year, next year as well. I think it's fair to say Nick Caserio is 1.5 years into what is a 6-year contract.
Right.
I think that's a fair standard to say.
It is, and that's what we've always said. Look, I mean, Rome wasn't built in a day, but a team wasn't reconstructed in 1.5 years either when you're starting from less than rock bottom, right? I think that you've got to be realistic. As much as we see in college sports these days, especially in football, where we say, hey, a coach takes a new job, and he's supposed to be able to turn it around in 2 years, 2.5 years, and you realize it takes that long sometimes to get your own recruits and your own recruiting class and type players into the program, and before they can even flourish and show what they can do, you're showing the door because expectations are so high. You have to be realistic, whether you like and believe in and think he's worth the 6-year deal or not. You can be critical of Caserio all day, every day, and we always are. But at the end of the day, you also have to be fair and realistic in saying, how big of a project was this? How much of an undertaking is this? Because you look at it and go, the roster, as we both knew and said and tried to express to you guys, was the worst in football last year, and it is again this year. When you have the worst roster in football and you have the limitations that he inherited coming in, you can't turn it around in 1.5 years. You can make strides. Maybe he should have made more strides. But you can't be realistic in saying, it's his ass because in 1.5 years' time, you didn't get this team to where I personally as a fan think they should go, not knowing all of the different limitations that they had and the different obstacles that they had to overcome.
Alex says that's trademark violation, the trust the process. Dick Willie, it's not a rebuild, it's a healing, which is a fair point. Lamont's texting in. Lamont, you're going to have to call on this one because I just don't disagree. When Caserio took the job, a rebuild was not the objective. And if I'm trying to make sense of this from a Lamont point of view, when Nick Caserio took the job, Deshaun Watson still was a Houston Texan and hadn't demanded a trade yet. So perhaps that's where Lamont's coming from. But the Texans were also a 4-win team in Deshaun Watson's last year. So, was it a reload instead of a rebuild if Deshaun Watson didn't demand a trade? Maybe, I guess. But it ultimately changed the moment Deshaun Watson said he wanted out. If the whole vision, whenever Caserio took the job, we're going to build up around Deshaun Watson. We have a franchise quarterback. That's outstanding. That's great. Let's try to reload. The moment Deshaun Watson said he wanted out, it changed the description of the job.
No
where
doubt.
It had to be a rebuild.
It wasn't a rebuild at that point, but it wasn't.
But even then, they won 4 games the year before.
I was going to say, and I'm looking for the right term or words for it, because you weren't at a rebuild, but you certainly weren't a competitive football team that was fighting for a Super Bowl. You were looking to try and make additions to try and get back to the playoffs. You already had a franchise quarterback, which we've identified is the biggest obstacle of any team trying to win football games. But at the same time, you already saw the best receiver in football shown the door for a bag of chips. You already knew that you were overpaying in a really horrendous trade the left tackle that you had, and you were stuck to him as the highest paid left tackle in the game for multiple, multiple years. And on top of that, you were paying
Nick. And that might have been his biggest, favor.
What?
What he lost. Tunsil's probably his best player currently.
I understand, but at what price, right? The price you gave up and the price you were paying him was limiting you. Then you were paying Nick Martin to be the 6th highest paid offensive line or at his position in the game.
Pre-Caserio, yeah. He left him in a terrible spot.
So that, as much as you don't want to say you were in a rebuild, you were in a reconstruction because you were trying to try and overcome these big old potholes that was going to eventually become the Grand Canyon that you had to try and fill in before you got to level ground.
Caserio said some really stupid stuff, and he's done some really stupid stuff, but saying I don't want to use the word rebuild is the stupidest. 1185, I for darn sure hope they are a rebuild. 8924, that's what worries me the most about Caserio. He's so scared to say rebuild. Anyone who can't see the team is rebuilding is a dummy. 9656, it was a recharge. Caserio was silly for that. Look like Brendan.
I can see the case for saying.
Saw it in your eyes.
I can see the case for saying I don't want to call it a rebuild.
Why?
The case is you're saying don't give me excuses. But if that's the case, He should be changing his mind now.
And that's kind of our point. Like, if you're going to say that and then, like, act like you're rebuilding, you're creating job security, like, disappearing. You're making your own seat warm.
I think it's a reasonable thing to say if you believe you're walking into a winner.
But I also think part of the reason why he started making those kind of statements was he signed and the ink dried on a six-year deal. He knew no matter what you called it or however you categorized it, that he had a six-year deal in his back pocket and he was going to be just fine. So, therefore, then you can start to be a little bit more of this confident, arrogant, egotistical, you know, kind of general manager that says, you know, from where I come from and my belief in football, this, we don't use the word rebuild, retool, reload, whatever. And I can do that because I can honestly say that I'm going to be fine no matter what, whether I'm here long term, short term, we rebuild or we don't. I got 6 years that says with all this money, I'm good.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what gave him the confidence to make that kind of statement, because otherwise it's ludicrous.
Yeah, it was one of the silliest things he's ever said. 713-780-ESPN, 1-1-8-5, closer to a remodel, 8845. It became a rebuild when Hopkins got traded. So that kind of counters what Lamont said, because when Hopkins got traded was pre-Nick Caserio. Hopkins got traded the year before O'Brien got fired midseason, and then Caserio was hired that past year. Lamont said, Brian, I'm actually your point. Before Caserio was hired, J.J. Watt said, I don't want to be part of a rebuild. And then they released J.J. Watt for absolutely nothing. A.R. Platinum, if this is not a rebuild, it's an implosion. I think that's a good point. 713-780-ESPN. We kind of got sidetracked a little bit there. The question is, should the Texans be further along in the rebuild? Don't listen to what Nick Caserio is telling you. He's lying through his teeth. This is obviously a rebuild, or best case scenario, it's a rebuild. Worst case scenario, it's far worse. But should the Texans, 1.5 years, as we've, you know, given the standard, the baseline of how far along into the rebuild Nick Caserio is, should the Texans be further along in this rebuild that they're currently trying to construct?
I mean, to me, obviously, they should be somewhat more further along. But I don't know how much more, because you don't have a franchise quarterback. And that's when the clock really starts ticking. When you get the one guy that we've said is the most influential, important position in all of professional sports. So I think that, yes, you can nitpick and say, look, with some of the trades that he misstepped on, with the coaching challenges that he created for himself, and then whoever made the final calls, how much of a joke that's been. When you look at the fact that, I kind of cringe when people want to be hypercritical. I get the first pick of this draft class. I get you can say Sauce over Stingley. I totally get that. And I get that maybe you shouldn't have, people can say you don't take a guard that high. But other than that, the fact that you found your starting running back that might be your, not might be, the best offensive player on your team, you got in the fourth round this year, I don't think that he failed at the draft. I don't think it was that miserable. Now, we can always nitpick it, but I think he did pretty well with his first full draft, to where I don't want to criticize him and crap on him for that.
713-780-ESPN. Should the Texans be further along into what is now a rebuild, whether when Caserio took the job or not? If it was a rebuild or not. Should the Texans be further along into this rebuild? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, should the Texans be further along in the rebuild than they are? 1.5 years into the rebuild, however you want to define it. I personally don't think that they should be further along. I think that they're in a pretty good spot in this rebuild. Like, I understand why people look at the win record and they try to jump to conclusions, right? It's like, okay, well, you know, they won 4 games last year, so they should be at 6 games this year. This is what we warned everybody about during the offseason, was, look, they might win 2 games next year and be in a better spot than they were the year before. Caserio's job is to build the team and have talent on this team. Has he done some weird things, as Gary called in and told us yesterday? Yeah, he's done some weird things. But the talent on this year's roster is better than the talent on last year's roster, and I feel 100% confident saying that the talent on next year's roster is going to be better than the talent on this year's roster. Has Caserio had missteps along the way? Yes, every general manager has missteps along the way. But if you go around the 53-man roster, I'm not sure how many, like, pillars you thought were going to be part of this team right now, December 21st, 2022. I don't think Caserio could have done anything differently to get pillars on this team. Now, could he had a better pillar with Sauce Gardner over Derek Stingley like we wanted him to do? You can make that argument, although I think it's way too soon to be having that conversation, especially with a scheme misfit that Derek Stingley is into a Lovie Smith cover two defense. But you just look around the team, and you did this a little bit earlier. Damian Pierce is a foundational piece. He's a pillar to this organization, one that you didn't have a year ago. I think the offensive line has two, maybe three pillars on this team. Now, two of them were here last year, but Laremy Tunsil was a question mark last year. This year, he's not a question mark. Tytus Howard last year was a question mark. He's no longer a question mark. So you could say, well, they were around last year, but they were question marks. This year, they're not. Kenyon Green, and I think it'd be unfair to call him a pillar yet because he has not looked good into his rookie year, and now he's one that you would have a question mark on. If you flip it, you don't have great receivers. Nico Collins, I think Nico Collins is in a better spot this year than he was a year ago, but I wouldn't call him
a
pillar.
But we also kind of know who he is, too, right? There were some people when they drafted him thought he could someday be a one or a really good two.
Yeah.
I think realistically, people have understood he's a three.
Sure.
Maybe a two on the right team.
It depends on how you look at that, because he's more of an outside guy. Like, I think John Metchie has more promise than Nico Collins, but John Mechie's like your slot.
He's a slot with
speed. So, like, some people would say Mechie's your three, Nico's your two, like, whatever. There's another name. Like, Metchie, you couldn't quite quantify as a pillar yet, but is somebody else who
Christian
could potentially be a pillar. I was looking at the offensive side. But, the defensive side, if you want to look at the front four and say there's not a pillar there, I would probably agree with that, although Malik Collins has a chance to be a pillar. Mm-hmm. I understand he's older than some of those other guys, but he's a good player. Christian Harris, I wouldn't consider John Gernard a pillar. Last year we would have.
Yeah. And this year we're like, what the hell happened to John Gernard?
Injuries were obviously a concern as well, but I don't feel as good about Gernard this year as I did a year ago. Christian Harris, a pillar. Jalen Petrie, a pillar. Derek Stingley, some people have some question marks. I don't when he's healthy. The biggest question is obviously the health. That's a huge concern. But if you just look at all the names we just mentioned, there are so many more pillars now than there were a year ago. Does Nick Caserio do some weird stuff? Has he been perfect with the draft? No, he is not. But this team is a much better spot in the rebuild currently than it was a year ago. So whenever we ask that question in 713-780-3776, should the Texans be further along in the rebuild? I really don't think so.
Because you also take into consideration his first draft that he took over. He started in the third round. There's only so much you can do at that point. But again, when we start talking about when do you add starters and what's the line, the cutoff line in draft, in the rounds that you draft, they always say special teams guys start around the fifth and sixth round and go down from there. Fourth and fifth, you're adding depth with the chance that one maybe 2 years down the road, they can compete for a starting job. They can be better than you maybe have thought about. You got a fourth round running back that's your best offensive player in year one. When we can crap on Stingley all you want and say, you know what, he's not Sauce. And like you said, there's so much more in terms of the evaluation as years go by, but it's not his fault the system doesn't fit his abilities, but there's no way you can say he can't turn into a shutdown corner, that he's not still one of your better defensive backs, that you didn't get a quality player at that point in the draft.
Yeah.
So I think that to say that this was people are killing this draft class. It's crazy how at the start of the year, oh my God, look at all the guys they got. And the fact that Mechie hasn't even played yet, or Christian Harris, this was an unbelievable draft. And all of a sudden, by week six or seven, this draft class sucks. And he doesn't know what he's doing, and it's more on Caserio. I'm not there yet because of the fact that you did hit on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that people are going to criticize that you didn't hit, well, you didn't miss. You just don't know if they're going to completely hit.
You can play that game all the time, though. Like, you can play the game of who you drafted at three and then look back in a year, and we'll probably do it here in a little bit, and say, well, this, you know, the guy picked fifth would have been better than the guy picked three. Yeah, okay, fine. Like,
sure.
Every team's going to have that issue. Every team's going to have that problem. But at the end of the day, you're trying to add pillars to a rebuilding team. And I think if you look across this team, and look, I don't think that they've been well coached. I understand that they've lost a lot of football games. They have way more pillars now than they did a year ago. And I think if we had this conversation a year ago and said, look, record aside, the Houston Texans are going to have eight pillars to the rebuild, I think we would have taken that a year ago. So I understand you're frustrated with the record, but don't let the record blind you to Nick Caserio has added some signature pillars to a rebuilding team that should be the foundation. Look, there's a lot of work to be done, obviously, but he has put together a nice young foundation that has a chance to be what leads this Texans organization back to prominence, however you want to define prominence.
I think you should be relatively satisfied with where the roster is. And I know we've talked about this a lot lately, but I think it's fair to say the coaching thing is a little bit of a frustration with where you are in the rebuild. Because I think you would like to have this year of judgment of, like, is this guy the guy? I do think, like, it sucks that you're going to walk into next season, mm-hmm. hopefully, you're going to walk into next season with year one of evaluation of a head coach.
You know what the Texans screwed up, though? The Texans screwed up firing David Culley. Because David Culley was supposed to be the
perfect guy for another year, just take it in the shorts.
And now it's like, well, can you get rid of Lovie Smith after a year? You're firing two minority head coaches back-to-back years. Can you do that, you know, in the NFL? Can, you know, Cal McNair, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. I think Cal McNair forced the hiring of Lovie Smith. He was not on the Nick Caserio interview list. Nick Caserio wanted to go a different direction. The David Culley, was David Culley a good hire? No. But David Culley's hire was not to, like, be the playoff coach for this team. It was to be the rah-rah cheerleader that was able to, like, keep a positive face when they were terrible.
But we had set the table for all of this in terms of the hierarchy of when you hire certain coaches. Like, you needed a bridge coach to just get the process started, to get you through the fact that these were going to be some lean years on the win in the win column, but that you had so much to do and so much rebuilding to get through that you didn't need a championship caliber coach and a veteran coach with a big price tag that was going to expect more than the roster could give you. But you're right. If it would have just been one guy, and to Brendan's point too, and you could say, hey, you know what? We actually found someone that was more of a diamond in the rough than we had initially thought when we hired him. And not only did he get us through the rebuild, but he showed us enough signs and possibilities that we're considering now having him as we move forward. Because we said that there was a cutoff point. The bridge was 2 to 3 years. And then you were going to go to when your roster was better. But then at that point, you assumed you would have your guy at quarterback. You would get a coach for the long haul that would be able to, along with the offensive coordinator, surround and help and protect this quarterback and bring him along so that he accelerates the entire process of becoming an NFL quarterback instead of being hindered by what we've seen across the league, multiple coaches, coordinators, and the wrong guy at the wrong time.
If you kept Culley, the decision right now would be so obvious.
Yes, like, no doubt.
It would be an absolute no-doubter. 713-780-ESPN. Killer B's asking you the question, should the Texans be further along in this rebuild? I think they're in a pretty ideal spot when you can not look past the win-loss record.
The other thing to Brendan's point, but also on the flip side of it, the negatives are the coaching search. And I always go to this, and Jeremy, you're not on board with it, I don't think. And again, I don't want to put words in your mouth. But I've always been a big proponent to the way he handled the Watson trade. Because of the fact that it could have been so limiting for a franchise and a general manager, and you could have just basically wiped your hands and said, I got no control. It's a no trade. He gets to pick where he goes, and then once he does, I'll try and work out the best deal, and they'll have the upper hand because they know he picked us. So therefore, no matter what, we're just going to try and salvage what we can get. Instead, because he was ahead of the game and he was negotiating with all the potential teams that might be the one that Deshaun picked, he negotiated deals prior.
Well, it took Deshaun Watson clearing the team before Caserio was negotiating.
But once he knew that there was these five teams, four teams, three teams, he could have, again, sat on his hands and said, well, once you figure out which one it is, then let me know and I'll call their general manager. Yeah. But to have these deals kind of worked out in advance, I think he got...
Well, I mean, it was three first-rounders. Like, it wasn't difficult. Like,
we don't know. I mean, I would push back. Well, I don't
reported.
Know I think that, again, the market was fluctuating. And I think that just the fact that he had at least limited, but he did have some control of the process, I give him credit for it. Because I don't think a lot of general managers would have done what he did. They would have just said, well, let me know when it's time to talk to whoever I got to talk to.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. James, should the Texans be further along in the rebuild?
No, sir. I'm not even a Texas fan, but I was listening to y'all's radio, and I've just seen everything that general manager has done. It's ridiculous. As a Cowboys fan, I wish they had something. We had somebody like that. That dude is trying to build a house with duct tape. They gave him nothing, and he just keeps making stuff happen after happen after happen. And I just think it's almost impressive. I'm like, man, that dude, to pull some of the stuff he said, the Watson, all that stuff he had to deal with, and get something out of, like, nothing. I'm just like, I think he's the best thing the Texans have. If they lose him, it's like, what else do y'all have?
Appreciate the call, James. That's a hot take. That is a bold
especially
take.
From a Cowboy fan.
I am a Cowboy fan. I wish Nick Caserio was our general manager. That's what he just told us.
Essentially.
713-780-ESPN. I want to react to the James conversation as well, or the James call as well, talking about the Texans, where they are in the rebuild, other calls as well. 713-780-ESPN. Should the Texans be further along in the rebuild than they are? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Doc O is the guy that makes it all happen there, and he is fantastic. He cares about his patients. He's going to get you results. He wants to know what you're going through, and he knows that as you get older, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, you're going to have problems that you haven't experienced before. And a lot of cases, you just think, hey, it's part of getting older. I'm not going to have anything that I can do about it. I just have to accept it. But if you get to the people at Apollo Men's Health, you can change it. You can get to where you were and not have to deal with those problems anymore. All it is first identifying the problem. Then secondly, getting the help that you need by contacting Apollo Men's Health. Go to ApolloMH.com. You can find out all the services they offer. You can see the things that maybe they offer that you realize you've been dealing with and that they might be able to help you. Set up an appointment. You'll find out most major insurance is accepted and there's discounts for military personnel and first responders. But then go through with the process. Once you've identified it, then go through and be open-minded. Tell them exactly what's going on. Tell them your shortcomings and where you've been falling short energy-wise, all the other things that you might be experiencing, and they'll get you on a program that works, that you can buy into and keep going with, and they'll get you the results that you are after. It's fantastic. I did it about 2.5-3 years ago. Could not be happier with all the different ways they have helped me. They can help you too. It starts with energy. If you want more energy on a daily basis, I get a B12 shot every week. You want to take it a step further, you can do hormone therapy. Both men and women are in the lobby every single week and getting hormone therapy and saying on a weekly basis that they have more energy, they have more get up and go, they can get all their things done every day where they never used to, and they feel like a rejuvenated new person. That's what you want to do with your life. No matter where you are and what stage you're in it, you want to have energy every single day. They help you every step along the way. All you've got to do is contact them. Tell them I sent you by a free body composition analysis or a free B12 shot on your first official visit. Then let the process go from there and reap the benefits of getting results thanks to the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Join us as we celebrate Christmas a little early with ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Season of Giving. Today is our mystery grab bag. We're giving away various gift cards to Cypress Trail Hideout, Orleans Seafood Kitchen, Charisma Wash, and a $100 Loft 18. Caller number 12 to 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, wins a gift card to one of the four mysterious locations. Tune in all December long for our Season of Giving, and don't forget to join us this Friday, December 23rd, for our annual Christmas party. Don't let the cold keep you from the party. We'll be broadcasting indoors from Nick's Place all day, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Also giving away a mystery bag during the Will House, so make sure you keep it here on ESPN 97.5. Should the Texans be further along in the rebuild than they currently are? 713-780-3776. Lamont, I will never get over Casario coaching hires. Dude hired a PE teacher followed by Black Santa Claus. I wouldn't be surprised if Toro's the next coach. Coaching hires is part of the rebuild. It's a fair point. Like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, you know, defend Nick Casario's coaching hires because they have not been good. I believe this was the thought for Nick Casario. I believe that David Culley was going to be his Bo Porter. Remember, Jeff Luno hired Bo Porter and for the first couple of years of his rebuild, and with the idea of, you know, he's going to have a transitional bridge coach. David Culley was supposed to be the bridge coach, positive guy in the face of losing 12, 13, 14, 15 games a year. For some reason, they decided to fire Culley after year one, probably because he looked incompetent, which we can understand. And then Casario wanted to have him for another year. So, like, Casario had to go out and get who he wanted to be his really franchise, hitch his wagon to a year early. I think he wanted to keep Culley for 2 years, hire his guy in year three, and instead he got fast forward. He had to do it in year two as opposed to year three, but then the rug got pulled out from under him, and Cal McNair is like, oh, Lovie Smith's going to be your head coach. Nick Casario didn't have that option. So I think it's totally fair to criticize Nick Casario's coaching hires. I think it's more fair to criticize Culley than Lovie Smith, because I don't think Casario wanted Lovie Smith, and I think the way that he drafted would back that up. But I don't really, like, I give the benefit of the doubt for Casario hiring Culley. Did he miss on him? Yeah. Should have kept him for another year? Yeah. But it was a bridgehead coach. He wasn't hitching his wagon to Culley.
See, that's my thing, because we said all along, and we kind of set you guys up for this too, the Casario was going to take the blame for Lovie, no matter how it turns out. And it's going to be on his resume that he hired him, even though it doesn't feel like, and the people that I personally have talked to have said, I'm not sure how much Casario had to say about the final say-so in who they selected because of everything else that was going on and image and everything that they were worried about. But when you look at it and you say, hey, look, he wanted a David Culley for multiple years because the guy was perfect. The guy was perfect if he could just follow directions. If he could follow directions, listen to what he was supposed to say at press conferences, do the things he was supposed to do. He's going to get a big salary to do exactly what they wanted him to do, which was grow through growing pains like the whole franchise and roster was, while they get the best draft picks possible. Again, embrace the suck is what we call it. But go through the motions so that you can be the best franchise you can be starting in year three and going forward from there. But he couldn't follow directions. He couldn't do things, and he did things so basically bad that was so obvious to the general public watching that you knew you had to make a change. He had to go. You couldn't go through this again because he was incompetent the way he was handling things. If he would have had to do it all over again, Caserio might take a guy with a little more experience just so that he could do what he needed him to do, which was have multiple years in the saddle.
Maybe Lovey year one, you know.
Exactly. I actually thought about that. I mean, if you had a veteran coach but isn't trying to make a name for himself and be a long-lasting head coach in the league, but a guy later in his career has been there, going to do it for as long as you need him to do it, and might be his last stop along the way, depending on what he makes, he might be the perfect guy to get you through 2 years and lead you into when you get the other pieces you need to really get the full in-motion rebuild going.
713-780-ESPN. Should the Texans be further along in the rebuild? 713-780-3776. Go out to the HRMP listener line. Sandler, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Sandler?
Hey, y'all. Merry Christmas. Hey, I had a quick question about something you said earlier where you know, Derek Stingley's getting a lot of hate, obviously, because, you know, Sauce is, you know, tearing it up. You know, everything considered, he's in a better defensive scheme for his skills. But you mentioned that, you know, it's – I don't want to put words in your mouth, but saying that it's not necessarily Stingley's fault that his skills don't align the system. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is that Lovey was our defensive coordinator last year. And, you know, whoever you want to say was going to be in that head coaching spot, you know, I'm assuming that you'd probably still bring over the same kind of schemes. So saying that, you know, it's not Stingley, you know, necessarily fitting the system, shouldn't you be drafting there to fit the system that's currently in place and not try to kind of just, you know, forecast the future with a guy who...
Appreciate the call, Sandler. That's honestly the point that I've been trying to make is, like, I think you can look at the Stingley pick as an example that Lovie Smith and Nick Caserio don't have this alignment and why Lovie Smith was never a Nick Caserio guy. In fact, Nick Caserio talked about after he hired Lovie Smith about how Lovie Smith isn't the same philosophy as things that he likes to do. If you go back and you look at New England, they ran a lot of 3-4. Whereas you look at a cover 2 where you have 4 down linemen, that is contrary to how Nick Caserio wanted to do things.
But isn't this what the caller just talked about and what we're talking about, this is really conducive to saying Casario's plan was a bridge guy for 2 years, and then you get the guy that can truly maximize the Stingley, and you get guys in place that run the system on both sides of the ball that you truly want to run. Mm-hmm. But for the time being, when you know you have no business winning, that you didn't need to be as focused on that. You just wanted to get the best football players that you could get.
Yeah.
And we knew he was enamored with and thought Stingley was the best football player
sure.
of the two guys, whether we agree with that or not.
Right, yeah. So, like, if you go back and you listen to Lovie Smith earlier this year, it was whenever they were about to play at Chicago because they had him on the reunion to Chicago, blah, 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 blah. I think it was Big Cat on Barstool, actually. Lovie Smith flat out said that he thinks a cornerback is the fifth That's most right. important mm-hmm. position for his defense. Then you have Nick Caserio, the general manager, using the number 3 pick of the NFL draft and the best draft capital he has ever had to date as the Houston Texans general manager to draft the fifth best or the fifth most important position for a Lovie Smith cover 2. It tells you they aren't aligned. I'm not saying there's beef.
Well,
I'm not
tells
saying
you it's wasn't his guy.
It tells you he's not his guy.
Yeah.
It also tells you that he doesn't think Lovie Smith's going to be his long-term
exactly.
guy.
Exactly.
Because if you're still going to draft the corner at number 3, despite Lovie Smith going on record to say that the fifth most important position in his defense is a corner, it tells you that that's not going
They're
to
not
be
aligned yeah.
long-term. Yep. And also, Lovie Smith also didn't adjust his defense. Like, Lovie Smith like sat there all offseason long telling you, no, we're not only a cover 2 defense. And then they're like, you know, top 3, top 3rd to the NFL and using zone defense. So you're not even utilizing that guy that you the way that you should.
To like maximize his skill set.
And look, the injuries, you can't escape that. So, like, I hate doing the little, well, if you just flip Stingley and Sauce, you would be talking a different story. Well, at least Sauce Gardner stays on the field. And if you look at Stingley, like, you go look at some of the advanced numbers on this, you look at Stingley in man-to-man, and he hasn't done it a lot, so the sample size is small. Stingley's numbers in man-to-man are pretty darn good.
They are.
Like, really good, actually.
And that's the frustration that we have as a show talking about this is, at least, especially in a year that's basically a throwaway year as it relates to wins and losses again, see what he can do. Put him in more positions, in more situations, so you can see as he plays the position that he's capable of doing
both. It's too late for that now.
Now it is. But I'm saying all year long, that when we saw, you know, the majority of the snaps all being zone defense, then what the hell are you doing? And then he's going to be evaluated based on not only his play, but the other guys in the zone, and were they where they were supposed to be, and did they do what they were supposed to do? And it's basically a throwaway year. So it goes back to a friend of the show that we both know very well in Travis Johnson, too, but it's in a different scenario. You're in a complete rebuild as opposed to when Travis was drafted. But they were not a rebuild, but they were building. They weren't where they needed to be. But when you take a guy and you automatically know what his skill sets are and his strengths, and you're taking a guy that you know your system goes completely against maximizing his strengths, then why are you taking? Because Trav used to always tell us, if I went one pick the other way and I went to Cincinnati, I might be a totally different player in this league, but the Texans misused me because they played a system that I'd never played in my life and wanted me to play it well, and then both of us look bad. And you don't want that to be the long term for Stingley. You want this to say, hey,
yeah, at least this one year. This one isn't like necessarily a bad scheme fit. It's more of a, you're not highlighting what he's good
at. And it's fixable.
Yeah, it's like Travis, I can't remember the Texans running back then. I think they were using four defensive linemen. And he was more of a 3-4 D lineman than a 4-3 defensive lineman. It wasn't a scheme fit. And I think you can look at scheme fit at quarterback prospects in this draft as well. 713-780-ESPN. Do you think the Texans should be further along in the rebuild than they are? 713-780-3776. Also, Brendan's got a little bit of a travel dilemma. Brendan always seems to have little bits of travel dilemmas for whatever reason. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey guys, time's running out, but that means there's still a bailout way that you can save the holiday and take care of your significant other. If you haven't gotten her anything yet, or you just don't want to brave the mall and the parking and the lines and all the congestion, you don't have to. But you got to get going fast. Get on the internet. Get to the pajamagram.com right now. Naturally nude pajamas are the thing, and they are exclusively available only at pajamagram.com. But you can get them for her right now, and she's going to love them because they are so comfortable to wear, so soft to the touch. It's like second skin. And she's going to enjoy putting them on as much as she wants to, and you're going to love how she looks in them. It's a gift that keeps on giving. You get them for her. She wears them for you. Boom, you know what you got. You don't need mistletoe to have a very happy and holly jolly holiday season. On top of that, if you buy right now the Naturally Nude Pajamas, they're going to throw in a Naturally Nude Nightgown. That's a $75 savings. That's two gifts for the price of one, and they both have you in mind because you get them for her, she wears them for you, and you guys are both happy this holiday season. Order right now, and they're also going to make sure they do their gift wrapping for you. So there, another step taken out of it. You don't need to sit there and battle yourself with paper cuts and scissors and tape and do a crappy job of wrapping that devalues the overall gift. They'll wrap it for you, and they'll get it there by the holiday. So they're going to take care of all of the details that you don't want to deal with or maybe have forgotten. Here's what you have to do to make sure that you get it done the right way. Order today. They sold out before Christmas last year. They're going fast now. So get to pajamagram.com. That's pajamagram.com. Order the Naturally Nude Pajamas, and everything that we just talked about is going to be included. The gift wrapping, the shipping, and of course, that extra nightgown. All you got to do is tell them Joel Blank sent you by. It's pajamagram.com.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Should the Texans be further along in the rebuild? 713-780-ESPN. Blankers and I kind of on the same side, which, man, that doesn't happen often. 713-780-3776. That's the thing that happens more than we think. 1638, Texans are okay, still sucking the way they do right now, but if they are not considerably better by next season, there is a problem somewhere. I agree, 1638. I agree with that. But what would you use to describe better? Like, that's the thing. I think the Texans are better from a long-term rebuilding point of view this year than they were last year, but it's possible that the Texans are going to win two times more or four times more a year ago than they are this year, despite being in a better spot.
That's, as a fan, again, it goes back to something that we've had come up on the show over and over again. The barometer for the fans is just the wins and the losses. The barometer for the fans does not include the development of the roster. They don't care. They don't want to know about the depth chart. They don't want to know, and they don't want to spend the time to see sometimes that you can be better on paper and at practice and in terms of what you see in the locker room, but you're not going to get the results. We talked about one of the dumbest statements Nick Caserio ever made. In terms of we're not rebuilding, we're not going to use that term. One of the best statements he ever made that we keep going back to is when he set the entire world up to realize, don't judge us on wins and losses, because they essentially admitted they're going to embrace the suck while they do it the right way.
I'm not saying that like wins and losses are the end-all be-all even next year, but can you guys agree that they need to come into the picture next year? Like, they need to be, not on a week-to-week basis, but over the course of the season. One or two wins is not an acceptable situation. Short of like major injury issues, they can't be winning one or two games.
But when we talked about the process, and Jeremy and I early on were talking about, does he have a plan? And part of the overall plan is the first 2 to 3 years, wins and losses are not your barometer. However, when you do get your quarterback and or start progressing the roster and start moving forward, then the barometer with wins and losses comes into play.
See, I don't think that's fair either. Because like I don't look at a rookie quarterback and look at wins. I don't think it's fair to do that.
Not initially right off the top, but I'm saying at a certain point when you take that next step in the plan, it's going to be the difference between a wild card team or making the playoffs and not making the playoffs. Then it's going to be, are you a wild card or you win in the division?
Not in year one, though. You're talking about
progression. No, I'm talking overall. We talk about tiers, like in the draft. There's tiers. There's tiers to the rebuild. The first 2 to 3 years, when you're in that tier, you're not worried about wins and losses being your barometer. In the second tier, when you start winning games and you start progressing, trying to be a more competitive football team, that's when throughout that next 3 to 5 years, wins are a barometer and they're important. They're more important than they are in that first tier.
They are not the barometer next year. Do you guys?
I don't think it should be this year either. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah. But I'm saying, like, do you guys agree when I say they should be part of the picture next year?
See, I don't know what that means.
What it means is, if we believe next year's team is better than this year's team, they're going to be in some close games, right, throughout the season.
Uh-huh.
I need to see you finish a couple of them. And I'm like, give me four. Like, I'm not asking for a crazy number, but if you're playing in a bunch of close games and losing all of them, I don't think that you can just write that off.
But does that fall on Caserio, though?
I feel it falls on the roster.
I think it falls on roster's part. I think it falls more on coaching.
Sure, coach. That's fair. Coaching's part of it, but you should have your coach next year. Sure.
But if you have your coach, and we're assuming, but we shouldn't maybe to this extent, if you have your coach and you have your quarterback, you also assume quarterback's going to make a ton of mistakes in year one. So therefore, you might have to take yet another step back to take two forward.
Well, I don't know if you can take a step back if you're winning one game.
But I'm saying, but I'm not factoring in wins and losses. But when you have to factor in wins and losses and say, should you win a couple more games? Yeah, that's realistic to say you should get a couple more wins. But you also have to be realistic, and your quarterback's not there yet to do what he's eventually going to do. And he's in a learning curve where he's going to make some mistakes that are going to cost you those same kind of games.
But it should be better than Davis Mills and Jeff Driscoll Allen and what the OC is. Now,
it is.
That's why I wanted Brendan to define in the picture, because I think four wins is fine. Like, that's a fine thing to say, even with a rookie quarterback. I don't think it's fair to think a rookie quarterback should be coming in day one and winning 8 or 9 games. 4 games,
I just want to see them finish games occasionally. Yeah. Not even consistently. Mm-hmm. But if you're in close games, I want to see you pull out once or twice.
Riska says on Twitch, rebuild would be way easier if we got value for Watt or Hopkins and didn't overspend for Tunsil. I agree with that, but it was pre-Caserio.
Yeah, none of those are on Casario's watch.
Yeah, it predates Caserio, so it's not really an accurate thing to say. 3501, how many of Casario's draft picks could start for another team? Okay, let's keep in mind there's only been 2 first-rounders. He's had seconds. He's had a full draft class this year, plus an additional first and third. Last year, he didn't have a first or a second. So let's be very clear what Casario's had to work with. I think if you looked at his first draft class, I don't really think there is a starter there. Mm-hmm. Nico Collins might be the closest to it. I wouldn't consider him a starter. You could say he whiffed there. Although Nico, I think, is fine where you drafted him. Did he deserve to be traded up for? No.
What about your boy Roy Lopez?
Third-round quarterback? like you're expecting that dude to be a backup. Davis Mills, I think, is a backup in the league, so it's not a starter, but I don't necessarily think that's a huge miss.
Right.
I think Roy Lopez in the sixth round is a win. I don't think he's a starter in the league, but he's a niche player.
I
he's
think
a depth
teams
guy.
He could start for.
I don't know. I think he's more of a depth guy. I think on a good team, he's a backup.
Right, on a good team. But I'm saying there are teams that are looking for a guy that, you know, a young guy that they're going to see what he can do, that
his
he
snap
can start.
Counts, his snap counts have went down on this team. So it's hard for me to make him a starter anywhere else. Now, if you look at this year's draft class, which draft picks could start for another team?
Three.
Derek Stingley absolutely could start on another team, and I think he would look better on another team. Kenyon Green, you can make the case he wouldn't. You can make the case.
I agree with that.
So, like, we'll leave that one off. We'll concede Kenyon Green defeat. You can use that to bash Caserio, which I think is fair. Not saying it's not fair. Jalen Petrie would start for a ton of NFL teams. And Dameon Pierce would start for a ton of NFL teams.
I think Christian Harris would start for a lot of football teams in this league.
Yeah, maybe slightly more than half. I don't think it's a like across the board, but yeah, a majority of teams in the NFL.
Yeah, it's not an overwhelming one yet, but again, it's also because of the sample size that we're getting because he came in and he got injured, and so you couldn't see what he could fully do. Now that you can see that he can do this, at least half the teams in the league say, I'm going to take a young kid from Alabama that has all of this upside, I'm going to start him, and I'm going to ride out with him to see what he can do. I think there's I would say 50% or more would start him.
I'll give you a majority there. Eric the Driver, they could and should be marginally further along had Nick not traded later round picks for Magic Beans, but aside from that, they seem to be in a decent spot. Look, I'm very critical and was very critical at the time of trading up draft picks when you have tons of holes. So you're not, you know, I'm sympathetical with you there, Eric the Driver. But at the same time, I'm not expecting starters in the sixth and seventh round. Those picks are like hoping that they fill roster spots. You're looking for depth with those picks. You're not necessarily looking for starters with sixth and seventh round draft picks. I'm not saying that we should let Nick Caserio off the hook for that, but I don't really think that that helps the rebuild tremendously. 1970. You know what they don't have? A quarterback. Okay. How are they getting a quarterback in those first 2 years? Like that.
Right.
Like, where did you want the Texans to get quarterback? Did you want them to play the veteran game? Did you want them to go after Jimmy Garoppolo, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield?
Did you want to give up a lot of your draft capital that you earned the ability
to trade for a good one?
To trade for a good one?
Did you want them to take Kenny Pickett, Malik Willis? Like, I don't know what opportunity was presented for Nick Caserio to go quarterback. I think Nick Caserio put himself in maybe the most optimal spot to maybe have a quarterback. We forget how people were talking in the city about Davis Mills going into year two. The Texans, do they have their franchise quarterback? Is Davis Mills potentially a top 15 quarterback? Could Davis Mills be Kirk Cousins? Nick Caserio created that based on a rookie he drafted in the third round. Now, this year, Davis Mills and Pep Hamilton proved he's not a starting caliber quarterback in the NFL, but Nick Caserio, I think, went the quarterback route pretty well.
He also took a flyer at the right time. In the third round with a guy that a lot of draft analysts said could have been a first-round talent had he stayed in school, and at the time, that's what we were hearing. We know differently now, obviously, but at the time, to hear that and know that you're really limited in how you could add a quarterback to this roster, you get a guy coming out early that might develop into something that can really be a tool for you, and you took him. So you took the right flyer at the right time. It didn't pan out, but you don't lose a whole lot in the process, and you go, you know what? I appreciate the fact that he was open-minded and forward-thinking enough to see this was a possibility, and he gave it a shot.
713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, every Wednesday at 2. It's in case we missed it. The stories we've been wanting to get to, but Brendan doesn't let us. We do it next, in case you missed it. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. The Texans and Brendan, they can lead you to drinking. And whenever I'm drinking, I'm having some Gentleman. You already know that. Whether it's the vodka, whether it's the gin, whether it's the bourbon. Wednesdays are always a good vodka day. All of those are part of the rotation for me, though. And Gentleman Spirits does it better than anybody else. Why? Because they have a Prosecco craft technology that's innovative. Nobody else in the market has it. And it makes it better in purity, aroma, and most importantly, taste, than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentleman, unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentleman, compare it to your brand, and you're going to taste the huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentleman Spirits, A&M Class of 85, had me out to the tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought. And ever since then, as you know, I've been a Gentleman man. It is clean. It eliminates the burn. It is so smooth. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentleman Vodka and Gin, Total Wine, and Specs also at gentleman.com. But big news, the bourbon now out on the market. 10 different specs locations around Houston. You can find it at Economy Liquor in Galveston, Reserve Liquor in League City. Get your hands on this bourbon. Double platinum winner in the prestigious Ascot Awards. Another way to try the Gentleman, Go to a Rockets game. Every single bar inside the Toyota Center, you can ask for Gentle Ben. And they also have their very own Gentle Ben bar, Section 125, with their signature drink, the Big Shot Bob. Sit back with good company and raise a glass to the very best, Gentle Ben.